How capable is the Ukrainian army to fighting against a Russian invasion? This is Brief Before Impact. Hey, welcome everyone. I am Matt Parker. Today's episode is going to be deep diving the issue of, in fact, the Russian troops cross over into Ukraine. What will that conflict actually look like? We're going to discuss kind of the Ukrainian military versus the Russian military. Additionally, the invasion routes that Russia has available to it. And lastly, how can the United States and NATO support Ukraine in this type of conflict if, in fact, we do not send troops to be on the ground? Let me take a quick ad break and then we'll get to work. Hey, welcome back, everyone. Let's break down the Ukrainian military versus the Russian military just in some broad terms, starting with just the size. Ukrainian military active personnel measures up to 200,000 versus Russia's 850,000. Defense budget is pretty substantial as well. Ukrainian's military budget, about $11 billion versus the $154 billion for Russia. Total aircraft, which is rather important in the event that airstrikes will be one of the first military campaigns in the initial invasion. Ukrainian military, about 318 aircraft versus 4,100 Russian aircraft. Tank strength, which would be important, especially any type of on-the-ground invasion. Ukraine has about 2,500 tanks versus 12,000 Russian tanks. In the fleet, in the Navy, Ukraine's military has about 38 naval ships versus about 605 of Russia's. So overall, Russia has quite a substantial numeric difference in total military power. And I'd even talk about nuclear weapons, though I don't believe nuclear weapons would be used in such a conflict like this. However, it just emphasizes the point that Ukraine, frankly, is outmatched. But I want to point this out. And there was a RAND study conducted in 1996 asking the question and deep diving the issue of what would it require if Russian troops were to own Ukraine and maintain a presence there moving forward. Unless Moscow were to like extensively kind of co-opt local collaborators, occupying the whole country of Ukraine would require about 20 Russian combatants for every 1,000 Ukrainians. That's equivalent to a force of about 900,000 soldiers. And I just mentioned that Russia only has about 850,000 active soldiers in their military. So keep that in mind, that number alone. If it would require 900,000 Russian soldiers just to maintain Ukrainian territorial gains, their entire military would have to be needed just to maintain that one country and in a post-invasion. So keep that in mind as we're talking about what Putin is trying to achieve. Let's talk about experience between Russia and Ukrainian troops. Russian troops have fought in several war zones over the past 20 years. But a new invasion of Ukraine would mark the first large-scale conventional war of the Russian military since the fall of the Soviet Union. That's according to retired Army Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, who's an expert on Russia and Ukraine. Vindman says the Russian military has made significant improvements since it examined its failings in the 2008 war against Georgia, especially in such areas as massing large-scale fires. Yet the last time when Russian troops conducted the types of combined arms operations that might take place in Ukraine was when the Red Army fought in Afghanistan. Vindman says, I think it is a combat experience force, but not a combat tested force. The difference being that they haven't had to face a real significant challenge with near peers or large scale conventional operations. Now, according to Task and Purpose, while Russian airborne and Spetsnaz, which are their special operation forces, have had numerous combat deployments, and many officers from frontline divisions have ground combat experience, Russian troops have mainly fought against insurgents, places like Chechnya, Syria, Libya, even most recently Kazakhstan. Now, far fewer troops have been deployed to war zones over the past 20 years than their American counterparts. A new invasion of Ukraine would see conventional Russian units deployed in numbers not seen in the post-Cold War world. So when we talk about the experience of Russian troops versus Ukrainian troops, there's some significant differences. But most recently, you've seen, since especially in the annexation of Crimea, Ukrainian troops have had the opportunity to deploy both regular and irregular units throughout that the combated region. According to the head of Ukraine's military intelligence service, General Budinov, Budinov outlines that kind of his nightmare vision of a Russian invasion that would begin with airstrikes and rocket attacks aimed initially at ammunition depots and trench-bound troops. Very quickly, he said, the Ukrainian military would be incapacitated, its leadership unable to coordinate a defense and supply the front. After that, he said, responsibility would fall to frontline commanders to carry on the fight alone. He quoted, "They will hold up as long as there are bullets. They will be able to use what they have in their hands. But believe me, without delivery of reserves, there's not an army in the world that can hold out." Ukraine's military, it's not a pushover that it once was in the past. In 2014, elite Russian troops were able to seize the entire Crimean Peninsula in southern Ukraine without firing a shot. When Russian-backed separatists then took over part of eastern Ukraine's Donbas region, Ukraine had to rely on volunteer brigades of people who took up arms with little or no military training to kind of help beat back that insurgency. But the Ukrainian military clawed its way back, fighting the separatists to stalemate and putting a stop to the most serious hostilities. It did so with help from Western allies. The United States alone provided about $2.5 billion in military assistance. That included some high-tech surveillance and some communications equipment, drones as well. In November of 2021, the United States delivered about 88 tons of ammunition, part of a $60 million military aid package pledged by the Biden administration. Last point on comparing these two militaries, I want to talk about the sense of purpose. What drives soldiers to carry on during really challenging times? And I want to highlight how Ukraine has been fighting kind of for its life in the last 8 years since the annexation of Crimea, in a very specific context just within that region. But it's worth saying of how they view themselves, and especially this perhaps imminent invasion of Russian troops across their border. Years of fighting have kind of given Ukrainian veterans, such as Colonel Vlasenko, the battlefield experience for such a fight. And Vlasenko had mentioned, and he says, "In case of Russian aggression, I will have no choice. Every Ukrainian is ready to die with arms in hands. Ukraine will never become a part of Russia. If we have to prove it to the Kremlin that Ukraine has the right to freedom and independence, we are ready for it. Ukraine will not become easy prey for the Russians. There will be a bloodbath. Putin will get hundreds and thousands of coffins floating from Ukraine to Russia," said Colonel Vlasenko. I think those words are so powerful and indicate at least the attitude of a high-ranking officer for the fight that Ukraine is willing to put up to push back against this this Russian aggression. Now, the Russians have more troops, better weapons than Ukrainians, but their accumulated combat experience, it's not likely really to provide them with that significant advantage against Ukrainian forces. What I mean by this is the Russian military, it's a conscript military. You have to join, essentially. Now, unlike the Ukrainians, which do have a conscript military, the Ukrainians feel like they're fighting for their lives. You know, I'm not 100% sure if combat experience gives them a leg up, certainly kind of vis-a-vis the Ukrainians. Inevitably, the Ukrainian military will get crushed in certain aspects of the fight. But in a prolonged, urban, perhaps irregular warfare scenario, I believe the Ukrainians will be giving the Russians a run for their money. So we've talked about the differences between the two militaries, Ukraine and Russia. Let's talk about the invasion routes afforded to Russia if it chooses to push into Ukraine. This is according to an article from BBC. if in fact, looking at Belarus, which is north of Ukraine, if Russia's goal is to full regime change in Ukraine, an assault from the north is highly possible, according to Michael Kaufman from the U.S.-based CNA Research Organization. But Russia has 30,000 troops in Belarus conducting joint military exercises, and they certainly have equipped with short-range missiles, rocket launchers, and a number of combat aircraft. Now, just to the east, within Russian territories, Russia's entire 41st Army is waiting on the border. So Belarus, if Russian troops were to come down south from Belarus, I think this would indicate a more larger full-scale invasion of the entire country of Ukraine, because it would most likely attack the capital, the city of Kiev. Now, secondly, if Russian troops were to launch an invasion from Crimea, a breakout from Crimea is almost certain if, in fact, Russia does launch this invasion, according to Ben Barry for the International Institute of Strategic Studies. A ground war would involve powerful armored columns with concentrated artillery support to attempt to advance the fast depth into Ukraine. An advance could also involve naval forces that are currently in the Black Sea. Russian landing ships in the area are capable of deploying personnel, armored vehicles, and even main battle tanks. And lastly, an invasion from the east, from actual Russian territory. Russian-backed rebels seized big areas in 2014, then two key regions of Luhansk and Donetsk. There's about 15,000 separatists operating in this region that might help a Russian advance, though Ukraine says that number's actually quite a bit higher. Now, if Russia were to attack from the east, it's possible that troops could advance towards Crimea, actually creating kind of a land bridge along that Ukraine's southeast coast. Analysts have emphasized that it's possible that any Russian advance could involve a number of routes simultaneously, allied to both cyber attacks, disinformation warfare, and missile strikes. So these are the options available to Russia. One, two, or all of them might be utilized during an invasion of Ukraine. So we've talked about the differences between the two militaries, also the routes afforded to Russia. Let's discuss how the United States and NATO can support Ukraine during such conflict between Russia. Now, Western countries, including the U.S. and the United Kingdom, have already provided Kiev with training and defensive anti-tank weapons like the Javelin or also the Stinger anti-aircraft missile systems, all to deter a Russian attack. But they're now weighing the support of Ukrainian resistance forces if Russia were to decide to further invade or just continue intimidating its neighbor, according to Western officials. If this Russian pressure is prolonged, we will need to take a very different approach to what we've done so far and look hard at how to manage the confrontation as a part of enduring process, according to one senior Western official. Now, the Biden administration officials have also told allies that CIA and Pentagon would help any Ukrainian insurgency with covert and overt aid. Now, Ukraine essentially has three levels of defense. That's got their regular troops, they've got their territorial defenses, and lastly, they got their neighborhood civil defense units. Approximately, Kiev says that there's about 1 million firearms within Ukrainian households, hunting rifles, but some semi-automatic weapons as well. Now, Ukrainian army units have been trained for guerrilla warfare. Matter of fact, Western special forces have been in Donbas for several years, according to a Ukrainian military intelligence officer. And those special forces units have been acting as frontline observers to study Russian tactics and help Ukrainian forces with targeting. So support for an insurgency would imply kind of a deeper involvement. For example, Western special forces could train insurgents and shelter them in, say, Romania, Slovakia, or Poland, and then send them back to Ukraine to fight. However, Moscow could really interpret this as they could interpret every insurgent operation as just NATO aggression, which would lead to escalation, according to Emily Harding from the Center of Strategic and International Studies. Now, the Kremlin in Moscow, they've been involved in asymmetric warfare in the past. And this is what we'll be diving into, really how the West can support, Ukraine. According to Jonathan Geyer, writing for Vox, since that annexation of Ukraine in 2014, Russia has been using types of asymmetric warfare techniques, whether it's cyber attacks, sowing disinformation, targeting U.S. diplomats, and more. And recently, the disinformation campaign has reportedly ramped up in the past few months. Now, this time around, compared to 2014, the United States appears to be really responding to that asymmetric landscape by sharing its own kernels of information, promoting them to news outlets, kind of with that cloak of anonymity, and doing what it can to defang the power Russia might hold in its deploying hybrid warfare. It's really this asymmetric approach to countering a possible Russian invasion. It does not imply a loss of overall military coordination. According to Andrew Zakornyak from the Atlantic Council, Ukraine's regular armed forces would still remain at the heart of the resistance movement and retain that command and control structure, even while operating in smaller units, that kind of in a decentralized manner. Obviously, the Ukrainian Special Operation Forces are going to play a crucial role, a leadership role in guerrilla warfare efforts. But Ukraine already has the tools and the personnel in place for a asymmetric campaign against, you know, a Russian invasion. But Western allies can make significant contributions to enhancing that deterrence, especially by just bolstering Ukraine's ability to wage an effective insurgency. Certain tools and weapons would be needed to really raise the cost of a Russian invasion, because that's what asymmetric warfare can be in some ways. How do you just make this fight so expensive that your foe doesn't want to fight any longer? So, for example, Ukraine's kind of wish list of tools would be, you know, portable air defense systems, anti-tank missiles, anti-ship missiles, drones of almost any kind would be welcome. Sniper rifles and platforms would certainly be useful. Night vision goggles, you know, radio communications, etc. All these things would make it a more difficult fight for Russia, in the hopes of deterring significant invasion and destruction of Ukrainian infrastructure and the Ukrainian people. So let's close out with the courses of action for what I believe would happen. In fact, if with a Russian invasion in Ukraine, most likely in the short to near term, I think the United States and NATO will support Ukraine, both with military advisors and weapons, in the early phases of a Russian invasion into Ukraine. Depending on Russian actions, that's where it gets gray, and I'm not sure in what type of support the United States and NATO would continue to provide. From our most dangerous course of action, in my assessment, it would actually be for the United States to signal any hesitancy or lack of conviction in supporting Ukraine. That type of narrative would only embolden Russia and, more dangerously, encourage China to equally be more assertive and more aggressive adversary in a region like the South China Sea. It matters what the United States does, even though Ukraine is this Eastern European country that many Americans probably couldn't find on a map. There are the second and third order effects to foreign policy choices that inevitably affect just normal folks like you and I. Thanks for tuning in this week. I mentioned last time that I did not believe that Russia would invade during the Olympics. February 20th was its closing day. Now, at the time of recording, it's February 21st. It could be that Russian invasion is imminent in the upcoming days and weeks. Certainly, the Biden administration believes that. So we'll see how this all plays out, and I'll do my best to keep you up to date. If you are on Instagram, you can follow me there. I try to post updates as often as possible and support on-the-ground reporting from a number of outlets that I believe are doing a great job providing kind of that on-the-ground truth of what's going on in Ukraine. Hope you are picking up what I'm putting down. I am Matt Parker. This is Brief Before Impact.